think. Mm-hmm. I think Brent might get the benefit. But
yeah, if you just saw it.
You didn't hit record. Oh,
rookie
no.
Mistake. Okay. Rookie That's mistake. Rookie mistake right there.
That's all right. Yeah, we can start over.
Well, that was a trial run, man. That was a trial run. You nailed it. So
thanks. You decided my takes were good. Were good enough to actually record them.
I was like
going to
try you out a little bit. And I was like, hey, if this works, we're gonna go with it. But
try before you buy.
This is why Mike does. What's going on? Got my boy Travis in the studio talking a little Oklahoma football, and you probably remember him. He's the man that predicted the Sooners to go 12-0 just a couple of months ago. No, I'm messing with you. Mike kind of did you wrong there. For those that didn't catch it, we had a best case scenario where we said, hey, this schedule, if the stars align, what do you think would happen? And obviously Travis, he took it hook, line, and sinker, and Mike totally clipped it and left the part out about the best case scenario. So I appreciate you being a good sport, but I tell you what, man, there's some good news. It sounds like coming out of Oklahoma.
Yeah. When you said, or when I saw that post, I think I immediately texted you and was like, dude, what is Mike doing? I was like, he hung me out to dry. I've been talking to other people there. I told somebody I was coming on with you today, and they're like, oh, are you going to predict another 12-0 season for us? And it's like, I never did that. What I actually predicted is that Oklahoma is going to be so good with the addition of Nagy and Brent Venables' continued growth is that they're going to make the SEC forget that Nick Saban ever existed. They're going to win the next 10 to 15 national championships. And there's not really anything anybody else can do about it. Good news, right? You said when the stars align, if the stars align in Norman. Well, I think the stars are aligning in Norman at the beginning of the portal cycle, at least. Obviously, you've got a guy like Jaden Ott, Cal running back, mm-hmm. who was, an All-American in 2023, dealt with some injuries last year, obviously. His film is incredible. And then you get Jake Mikla as well. To really shore up the interior of that offensive line. What I liked about it, Cousin Shane, was it got announced before the portal even opened, right? It was like, hey, portal, boom, here we go. Official account, Oklahoma football official account, not a Hayes Fawcett tweet, not a Pete Nakos tweet. Not a nothing. Jaden Ott didn't even go on any visits.
Does he go by Pete still? Or I thought he went by a different name.
Yeah, he might. But if you ask some around your parts, he might go by a different name. But the Jim Nagy kind of bringing that, kind of professional type. Like, it's all business. Like, he knows every agent. He knows these guys. He was tweeting about Jaden Ott like 2 years ago. Like, because he was scouting him for the NFL draft for he just knows these people. And, I thought it was fantastic get, and the timing of it. Cause know, the same as I do, that fans lose their mind once portals open because they only see the guys leaving because they're about to start bringing guys in, but guys have to leave first. So, this saves us from that. I talk to people around Norman, and I'm like, hey, what do you think of the portal? What if we lose this guy? They're like, psh, no matter. Nagy's got it all under control. We've already got Jaden Ott and Jake Mikla to add to Mateer and Satania and Giovanni Gibson and, all these guys that we brought in. So really exciting times in Norman. I'll be interested if the betting number changes over the next month or two because – we got a lot of really good national, publicity with the Jaden Ott commitment, and obviously the Jake Mikla one with it. Really, really excited. Should be a fun year, but just have to navigate this monster of a schedule.
Oh, buddy. Yeah, I've got it. For those that are just listening, I mean, you got teams like Michigan, Auburn, Texas, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Bama, Mizzou, LSU, there's a legit opportunity here, man, that you play 10, let's say 9 top 25 schools this upcoming season.
Yeah, but you know, if you're doing the counting, we play 9 Power 4 teams, right?
Yep.
7 of them possibly have a new quarterback.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. Sorry, let me pull that.
Yeah, let's put away that one. Oof.
Yeah.
But I mean, you look at Michigan. Michigan's freshman.
Yeah.
Jackson Arnold isn't running away with the job in Auburn. Arch at Texas. Obviously, Ole Miss got a new quarterback. They even brought a portal guy in. Nico is long gone from Tennessee. Jalen Milroe's gone. Yep. Brady Cook and Drew Pine are gone. So really, Lenora Sellers and Nuss, they're two great quarterbacks. But Brent Venables is calling the defense in 2025. And he gets to deal with potentially 7 of the 9 Power 4 teams dealing with new quarterbacks, some of them freshmen. So I think that's going to be a sneaky reason why Oklahoma has some success.
No, I think you're correct, man. And just to say that you can put in a quarterback and all things are well again is easier said than done in this conference. And I'm curious because you mentioned Arnold there. Oklahoma fans obviously did have some leave last year. We had plenty go to Auburn. We had plenty go down to LSU. Is there one team that maybe you're a little bit more upset about because of that portal situation, or were you just kind of happy to clean slate, let's move forward type situation? What's the mentality out there in Norman?
I think the one that I really hated to see go, even though he's dealt with a ton of injuries, unfortunately his brother dealt with a ton of injuries when they were here. When they're healthy, they're incredible players. They're NFL players. Nick Anderson going to LSU was the one for me. You know, Bauer had an interesting year for us last year. I think he'll do fine down in Baton Rouge. Didn't really mind Jackson going to Auburn. I know he had multiple suitors for sure. I do think it's interesting that he came out with that quote about, you know, kind of, well, we were 3-0 and then I had, you know, bad half and then I got benched. Like, we heard the same thing when Spencer Rattler said his record and failed to mention that Caleb came in and saved him from a Texas embarrassment. I'm fearing that Jackson is still having some issues with accountability. Like, if he can look at last year, which Oklahoma didn't put him in the greatest situation, I'll be the first to admit that. You know, Seth Luttrell didn't. You know, the offense really wasn't catered very well to him, and Seth's play calling of it was not. Offensive line dealing with massive, massive injuries, right? You had wide receivers dealing with massive injuries. So he wasn't set up in a great situation. But for him to come out and kind of seem like he has no idea why he got benched, like, come on, man. Like, we were 3-0, but the first three games were like, what is this? I thought this was our fancy five-star that we had coming in. National Gatorade Player of the Year, this, that, and the other. And hopefully he just mature. I mean, my freshman year in college, I wasn't, the most mature of my life. But, you know, you hope he continues to get there. But that quote, I was like, oh, man, not the accountability that I was expecting from him.
Oh, no, me either. But I do think the ads are important to note. And, you know, because we cover the entire SEC, and I will say one of the most you ever heard the saying, watch them paint dry? I compared that to two offenses last year, and that was Oklahoma and that was Kentucky. I would rather watch water boil than watch that offense at times. But I like how aggressive you guys were. I like how aggressive you still are in the portal. You talked about Ott. You talked about your center. You talked about, I mean, shit, we talked about Mateer since we found out he was coming down there. But we don't talk about what this offense will look like. You've been there. You're behind the scenes. So for all the other SEC fans out there, when they see Oklahoma, how much different is it going to be than last year? And what kind of style do you think they're going to be putting on the football field?
I mean, it's going to be night and day from last year. He runs – everybody pretty much runs the same offense now, theoretically, unless you're running the triple option. A lot of the same air raid concepts and some veer and shoot concepts get places, some power spreads, like all the concepts, people have variations of them. But I mean, aggressive would be the word that I'd use, because
right.
Ben Arbuckle has said many times, look, I want to match aggression with aggression. If you're sending somebody on a blitz or something, I am telling John, mm-hmm. and keep in mind, John Mateer and him go back years. I mean, the combination of them moving together was no accident, and Oklahoma will be at a big advantage because of it. But he will take shots downfield. It will be a bit of a, you know, kind of a Brett Favre, you know, Baker Mayfield gunslinging mentality of, oh, you want to put pressure on us? All right, I hope you're good on the back end, because I'm about to make your corner cover. Like, Deion Burks, you better keep up with him, right? Like, this is the most talented cast that Mateer will have played with, but also it's the most talented cast that Ben Arbuckle will be able to call with. And Arbuckle, a lot of people say, oh, Oklahoma doesn't need to go get a big tight end. Look at their offense. They don't run a lot with the tight end. But the thing is, Arbuckle always says, I am personnel driven. If I have a matchup I like, I'm gonna go to that matchup all the time. And that's the thing. You become really dangerous when you're personnel driven, if your personnel is good. And I think Oklahoma's personnel is good.
Yes.
And I think John Mateer is the perfect man to run it. You know, for my money, he was the top portal quarterback. But if you were to say, I don't know, say Carson Beck was, like, say somebody had Carson Beck rank higher, I would take John Mateer, knowing Arbuckle's our OC, in a heartbeat. I wouldn't even bring Carson Beck in on a visit if I knew I had the opportunity to, you know, conjoin Mateer and Arbuckle again, because we saw this happen at Vanderbilt, right? Diego Paiva gets his OC. You know, you're getting guys to say, hey, who's your OC? And hey, if we're hiring an OC, who's your quarterback? Because we want you. Jeff Lebby and Dylan Gabriel had worked, you know, had coached and played together before. Getting those type of guys that understand the offense, it really puts you, you know, a couple steps ahead of the game. And that's where I feel Oklahoma will be with this offense. I think that you're going to see aggressive, attacking downfield, throwing across the middle. John Mateer loves the middle of the field. Thank God he's not playing 30 years ago, or else he half his receiving core would be decapitated. But he loves throwing across. It's almost like it's a fun challenge to him. He's like, I bet I can fit it in there. I bet. Yeah. And he does. So I'm excited. The locker room loves both of them already. I mean, I've had other position groups tell me, man, Arbuckle is our dude, man. He's cool. Like, he's awesome. Yeah. One of the things he talks about, Shane, is the best thing you can do for a quarterback is make sure that he thinks he's the baddest dude on the planet. Like, at any point in time, because you saw this last year, you see it every year with quarterbacks, but in Norman, you saw this with both of our quarterbacks at times. I think they lost confidence. And that's the number one thing that Arbuckle says is, my quarterbacks will never lose confidence. I will make sure that they know that they are the baddest dude, and give them all the confidence that they can hold, so they walk out there with that swagger, with that confidence in order to lead the offense.
I love it, man. I mean, because that's the last thing you want is a scared quarterback. And
can't be seeing ghosts.
Everything I've seen from I'm telling you. So I'm pretty excited about that. But he's got to have some weapons around him. You know, I know we got Deion coming back, but I think we did have another injury this spring, correct? Gibson, if I'm not mistaken. Is the portal still – are we still looking at some guys, maybe some ads for that offense?
For sure. We currently have 13 – scholarship wide receivers. I think somebody the other day said 10 of them are banged up in some way. But banged up can be anything from a rolled ankle to, you know, a broken ankle. You know what I mean? Like, that it's everything in between, right? So Giovanni Gibson, the big ad, was having a great spring, had an injury. But Brent Venables said in his spring presser after the Crimson Combine that he might be back before the season, which was the initial diagnosis was way later. So you've got that. Obviously, Isaiah Satania, who came over from Arkansas, looked fantastic in the spring. He's going to give you a lot. He'll do probably some punt return duties for you. You know, you've got some of those guys. Then you've got some young guys, right? Ivan Carrion, the big boy out of Texas, you know, 6'4", 6'5", type guy. Then you've got Zion Kearney, who was, I believe, a top 100 recruit a couple years ago, he's having a good camp. There are others that, you know, you can continue to put out there, but again, it's going to come down to health. I do think we add one, maybe two, but then you're talking 15 scholarship receivers. Now, do they process a couple? I certainly think they might. But, you know, what Nagy looks for is production and size. When he got to campus, he said, SEC teams are big. Like, big, strong, long, you know, explosive. Those are the type of athletes that are in the SEC. So, those are the type of athletes that we need to go get. So, make no mistake, you've seen us go after 6'3 receivers, 6'1 receivers, 6'2. Like, it feels like must be this tall to get recruited by Jim Nagy at this point. So, he's definitely got a type that he likes, and he wants you to have a bit of production. He's not going to be going after the guys that, you know, you see on the edits all the time. Former top 50 recruit in class of 2021. I'm like, oh, what has he done? If you're telling me what his recruiting ranking was years ago, then he hadn't done anything. So stop telling me that. What have you done for me lately? What have you done at the college level? So we're going to go get receivers. But you know, we're hoping some people get healthy soon.
Well, we've talked about all the good stuff here. Let's bring up a little bad. Is there a concern in this game? Like, is there something that you've seen maybe this spring or what would be the Achilles heel of Oklahoma 2025 season?
Let's see. As the roster is currently constructed, the Achilles heel for me would be injuries at corner. Because Eli Bowen was a freshman All-American last year, right? Peyton Bowen's little brother.
Right.
He was an freshman All-American at corner. Expect him to be very good. Gentry Williams, who has, you know, first round ceiling at corner, but he's dealt with shoulder issues the last 2 years. If you remember, he was the one that picked off Quinn Ewers 2 years ago when Oklahoma beat Texas in 2023 and like the first series of the game. Right. He's elite. So you get those two guys. One has never had injury issues, really. The other one has. And behind them, you don't have much. You have Jacoby Johnson from Mustang, Oklahoma, who's an absolutely elite athlete, basketball star, football star. He could play wide receiver. He can play anything. Big, long athlete. He's playing corner. He played last year. He started against Mizzou, I believe. And then on the other side, right now you're kind of looking at, you know, either redshirt freshman or freshman. So you've got Malik Hawkins, who's Mike Hawkins' younger brother, right? And then you've got Cortland Guillory out of Texas, who's really turning a lot of heads, having a good spring. And then you've got Devon Jordan, who's from my alma mater here in Tulsa, Union High School. Those guys have never really seen meaningful action. So you really need to shore that up, because you can be amazing on the defensive line. You can have great edge rushers. You know, you can have good linebacker play, good safety play. If those corners can't hold up, then these offensive coordinators and these quarterbacks will eat you alive. It won't matter if you're good at anything else, because you'll have such a leak that you can't hold water. So if the season were to go wrong, if you just woke me out of a coma and you said, "Hey Travis, we're on air. You guys went 6-6. Why do you think it happened?"
Yeah,
I would say corners must not have. They must not have found them in the portal, and they must have had some injury issues.
All right. Well, I they just announced SEC Media Days, the dates coming up and everything. And I always try to figure out which three they're going to send, you know, and I would imagine we're going to see Mateer there. I mean, hell, if you're going to bring Arnold to the thing, you might as well bring Mateer to the dance. But who's the voice of this defense now that Danny's gone?
Man, I would bet they bring Kip Lewis. Kip Lewis, obviously, Auburn fans remember him as, you know, Peyton Thorne threw the Kip 6 to him to win that game down there in the Plains. And then you've got, obviously, he had another pick 6 against Alabama. But he's really just the energy guy. Like, I think that if you want some excitement at Media Days, if you want a guy that's going to bring a lot of enthusiasm, you're going to bring Kip, you know, Mateer being the other one. I think you might bring Robert Spears Jennings, Not entirely sure. It would probably be him or Deion Burks. But Robert Spears Jennings is a guy from Mansfield, Texas, originally, and then moved up to Tulsa, played here at Broken Arrow, and originally played wide receiver in high school. And then finally, OU was like, hey, we're going to recruit you on the defensive side of the ball. Maybe your high school should start playing you there. And then he started playing two ways. And PFF, I think halfway through the year, had him as the nation's top safety. And he was back there with Billy Bowman, who obviously is going to be, you know, probably a day two draft pick. But yeah. I would say those guys, I really expect R. Mason Thomas, one of the sack leaders from a year ago, Kip Lewis, and Billy Bowman to pick up on the defensive leadership side that was left by Ethan Downs, Danny Stutzman, and Billy Bowman.
Yeah, I just we talk about it, man. I'm always wondering, like, do we look back at 24 and say, man, if we had that defense this year, we would have won a national championship. I have a feeling like you always have these position groups that come through your school, and you're just like, man, we have this, but we lack that. Do you think we look back 10, 15, 20 years from now, and we look back and say, you know what, that may have been one of the greatest defenses to come through Oklahoma?
Well, not one of the greatest to come through Oklahoma, because, you know, many of our seven national titles were built on the back of Butkus winners and Bednarik winners and all these guys. But it is interesting, though, you bring that up, though, because when Paul Feinbaum, who, you know, friend of Mike's, when Paul Feinbaum came to do the SEC days, right, he walked through, got the tour, obviously, of the trophy cases. And he even said, you sometimes forget how much winning Oklahoma has done, because it's just,
that's right,
because in this, they didn't win in the internet, like, podcast era. You know what I mean? Like, where all the takes came around it and all the attention came around it. I would say that most people think of OU as an offensive team, right? They think of the high scoring, the Sam Bradfords, the Jason Whites, the DeMarco Murrays, right? The Bakers, the Kylers, the Jalens. All these high-scoring, high-flying offenses under Lincoln Riley, and then, you know, Bob Stoops had some great offenses, record-setting offenses under him. But at its core, really, Oklahoma's always been winning with defense. So yeah. I think when you look back at some of the great defenses, a lot of them were designed, built, and coached by Brent Venables when he was here the first time. That's how we ended up with a national champ. Mm-hmm. I mean, in 2000, you win that game 13-2 against the number one offense in the country. You hold them to zero offensive points. I mean, that's the thing that not a lot of people talk about when they're talking national title teams. But it's when you look back at last year's defense, I think they were a lot better than the numbers even suggest, because of how much time they spent on defense, like how much time they spent on the field. I mean, when you look at when they forced turnovers, if you go back and look at OU's forced turnovers, on a extremely high percentage of them, the next play, we turn the ball back over to the offense. Like, the defense just got the ball for you. And if they didn't score it, then they might have to go back out onto the field the next play. Like, just an insane number of snaps they had to play. And I think that's why this defense stands to improve statistically, because I think they're going to be on the field less. Again, when you add a guy like Jade Knott, you're running the ball probably a bit more, definitely more effectively than you were. Xavier Robinson obviously showed up in a big way late in the season. You're going to be much better on the offensive line this year. Your offensive coordinator is going to have a plan for that. And I think you're, for the first time in maybe 10 years in Norman, you're going to see complementary football.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel like that's, I keep hearing the same thing with Oklahoma. It almost feels like a lack of respect, and I get it. You come in to 24 season, it's a disappointment. And SEC fans, I hate to break it to you, we didn't watch any Oklahoma football games until 2024. So that first impression is what this league has a lot of the Oklahoma. But I think it could be fixed. I think Oklahoma, you can't keep them down for long. Obviously, you're seeing with the hire of Nagy, you're seeing with the portal, the way it's been very active. And I tell you what, it's been exciting. I can't wait to see Oklahoma offense. I can't believe I'm saying that after what I watched last year. I thought, man, I'm going to have to watch this for two more seasons before we get another quarterback in, you know. But now it feels like you got a little bit of a facelift. But one of the questions that was brought up on the show the other day, we were doing my lifetime. So the last 43 years, we'll say 40 years, where would you put Oklahoma as far as not just all sports? We're just talking football only. Where would you kind of put them as maybe the most successful program out of the teams that are currently in the SEC?
Last 40 years, you've got two national championships. You've got a handful of Heismans, I think a literal handful of Heismans. You've got number one picks. You've got a bunch of conference championships, which is odd because, you know, we weren't in the SEC. So like when you're judging conference championships, but talking about against the SEC, it is a bit different. Although 2000's Big 12 was really good. And late 90s, like when Nebraska was kind of coming down off theirs, they won three titles in the 90s. And so then you had Kansas State and Colorado was really good. Texas was good. Texas, you know, there was a time where Oklahoma and Texas, one of them was playing in the national championship. It felt like every year, right? So, like, there, you know, 03, 04, 05, you know, all those, like, I think 08 and 09. So I'm going to count all those conference championships we've got. Wins, I think when you go, you know, past 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, all that, Oklahoma's like top three in wins. I think it's like Bama, yeah. Ohio State, Oklahoma, and then I think like Boise's in there. So they're top five in those. So when you rank, I think if you did the last 40 years and you just did the counting stats, I think Oklahoma would be top four in the SEC in that time, because you got what? Bama would be number one, obviously. And then you've got LSU that's won under different coaches, obviously, in those last 40 years, three of them. And then Georgia, okay, Georgia's got the back-to-back. They've got that. They've been good. But really, I mean, the
– Florida was the only other
Florida
one
for sure,
up.
That's a good point. But
so would you put them kind of in that mix, or would you put them outside of that bubble?
I think Bama's in its own bubble. But I would put them in the next tier because I mean, Florida was playing Oklahoma in one of their titles, that came down, you know, came down to it, in a heck of a game. If DeMarco Murray plays that game, it probably goes a little bit differently, but like there's like, again, 40 years takes us to 85. Who won the national championship in 85? Oklahoma. Like, so that's a convenient cutoff for my argument's sake. If you were to go 50, cool, we'll add another national championship in there. So I think that in the totality and the counting stats, Oklahoma win percentage, right? Conference champions, weeks at number one. I mean, weeks at number one in that time, they might be two or three on that list, in the SEC behind Alabama. I think it's Alabama is in the top tier of the last 40 years. And then you're going to look at Florida, LSU, Georgia, and Oklahoma kind of all grouped together right there. And then you've kind of got everybody else.
And the only reason I'm asking, I'm not trying to be an asshole or anything. I always try to figure out expectations and standards. And, you know, I could sense the disappointment with Oklahoma fans with what they saw last year. And so I tried to always figure out what's the standard. I don't know. You know, like if we go another 20 years, do you expect Oklahoma, let's use your analogy, tiers, there's 16 teams. The first tier, let's say, is a team of four there. Do you expect Oklahoma 20 years from now to be firmly in that top tier, or do you think they're a second-tier team? Does that make sense? Because Ole Miss may come out here and say, hey, I expect to be an SEC championship. Well, you've not been to one. So, yes, I know you say that, but clearly your standards are going to be a little bit lower than some of these other guys.
Yeah, I expect to be – In those top four in 20 years. I think part of it is because the expectations around here. When you drive by our stadium, it says 50 conference championships on it, which is the most of any team in college football history. It says the seven national championships. It says the bowl wins. You've got the Heisman Park. You can't be around campus without the expectations being shoveled upon you. And I think the money's going to be there, obviously, because the TV deals are going to continue to grow. Everybody in the SEC and the Big Ten are going to keep making a ton of money, and it's just going to be a war of attrition. earnings keep on going up. Everybody else's earnings go down. It is what it is. We'll see what college football even looks like in 20 years. But I think you have those standards, and I think generationally, I think there are people that will make sure and uphold those standards by investing in the program and recruiting with that history. And you have a lot of guys that have ties to the program that are in the NFL now that would probably be highly sought after coaches or donors one day or things like that. So when you build such a large base, you know, people talk to me all the time because of Shane about, man, we need to hire somebody from the outside. How come we keep hiring all these Oklahoma ties? It's like, okay, two reasons. One, they're familiar with the standards. And two, you just have a lot of them everywhere. Like, you want LSU's offensive line coach? Cool. He was at OU. You want Michigan? You want Sherrone Moore? Cool. He was at OU. You want Josh Heupel? Cool. He was at OU. You want all the, like you can't play that game without running into some people that have been tied to OU because they were so successful for the last 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, 60 years. Like, eventually, like, you're gonna run into, you know, your degrees of separation are very small. So I think 20 years from now, especially because Oklahoma has been very wise financially, they're one of, I think, only five schools in the country whose athletic department is self-sustaining. They don't ask the everyday student to help, you know, fund the athletic department. They're very proud of that. I think that they're going to continue with the pro model. Jim Nagy, I think they're being foundational in that. I think they're going to lead the way on that. So yeah, I they're right next to the Dallas Metroplex. Like, you're going to have enough talent to last you until you fill your roster, right? I'll say. So those would be why I'm confident.
And 20 years from now, will Texas even be in the top 10?
you're baiting me on that one. I'll tell you what. They'll be in the top 10. They'll be trying. They'll be in there. But no, I've been impressed with what Texas has been able to do. I hate them, but I've been, you know, you can hate somebody and still respect them. I don't respect Texas at all. I'm saying it is possible. Sark has done well. He's really good for 99 yards of the field. You know, maybe the best. But that first and goal from the one, fourth and goal from the one, tends to give him fits. But I'm excited to see what the Arch era has in store. Right, first time starter, all the pressure in the world. He's got a ton of talent. But Texas lost a ton of talent. We will see. But now Texas, you know, Texas with Sark, as long as he can keep those donors out of the way. That's always the problem with Texas. It's never the coach.
Yeah.
It's always the donors, that these big oil tycoons that think that their opinions should matter, and they're going to start meddling a little bit. There are rumors that that's why Saban didn't go to Texas, is because the Texas donors couldn't be told, hey, hands off, because that oil money, that's a little bit different.
definitely, man. Well, hey, man, I appreciate you taking your time. And for those that didn't know, this is the second time we've done it because I didn't record the first time.
Man,
this really is over an hour long. But Travis, I really do appreciate you coming on. And before you go, can you tell the audience, how can they find you? How can they get your content?
Yeah, absolutely. Handle right there is at Travis Skoll, TravisSkoll. I'm on KREF Sports, the home of Sooner fans, on the radio with Tyler McComas, Wednesdays 3 to 6. You can download the free app. It's an incredible app. And then also I got the JP and Trav show on Wednesday nights. And then if you are a football coach, AD, basketball coach, anything like that, you may be seeing me soon. I have a company called Team Sports Consulting Group, and we do relational psychology consulting. I actually, believe, have a meeting with one of your favorite coaches here coming up. I won't divulge it, maybe off air, but we're into the SEC. We go all the way down from high school all the way up to the SEC, to the NFL combine, all kinds of stuff like that. So if you're a coach, get at me.
Yeah, hell yeah. What's Skoltz? Is that from tobacco? Is that
no?
That, is that how you got that name?
No, or? Skoll, that would have an A in it. Skoll, S-K-O-A-L.
Oh, that's how we spell it in Tennessee, right?
Yeah. So I was born in Minneapolis, actually, a suburb of Minneapolis. Uh-huh. So Skoll Vikings, a big Minnesota Vikings guy. So all the LSU fans watching, I know Justin Jefferson is still scoring on the Oklahoma Sooners from that fateful night down there. But I am glad, because with all those touchdowns he scored against Oklahoma, it meant that he got to be drafted to the Minnesota Vikings. So well worth it, in my opinion. I'll take him all day, every day. We've got the best receiver in football. So
I had to ask. Sorry, man. No, absolutely. I always thought it was tobacco, you know?
No.
My dad, he did it. He used to freeze it in the freezer. So they'd be like cans of Wintergreen Skull in there. And I never thought I was never a Skull guy. I tried Copenhagen once, you know, I did. I'm not, again, kids, if you're listening, not telling you to try this stuff, but I did it. I peachy, Big Red, you name it. It went. I remember one time, man, I went to the fair, and this is how country we are. So fair comes around. It's a big event for East Tennessee. Yeah. It came to town, and you come up, and there's tobacco people there, and they're like, "Hey, are you 18?" And I was like, "No." And he's like, "Yeah, you are. Just sign here." So I signed, and they gave us free cans of Extreme. I don't know if you've ever heard of Extreme.
I've not.
But damn, it lit. It tore me up, brother. I sat in that Ferris wheel probably about 10 times. I just stayed there because it was the coolest spot in town. But I was just trying not to launch my dinner from that evening. But man,
hey, sorry.
No,
speaking of dipping, we'll have to talk about Nico some other time, because I got you know.
Oh, buddy.
Speaking of dipping,
I tried not to bring him up, and here you are.
Well,
I thought you did psychology. Now you're getting it.
Exactly. Hey, the scuttlebutt I heard was that he was ducking Brent Venables. So he didn't want to be on Oklahoma schedule in 2025. That's the scuttlebutt I heard.
He heard,
his camp heard that Brent Venables was going to be calling the defense. And they said, "Yeah, nah, we got to go, bro. We got to go. Get us out to the West Coast where we can be safe."
Oh, no. What he said was what I heard. Now, this is rumor. Okay. I just heard this from another guy. He says, the money talk happened after Norman. He said, "Because if you're gonna keep taking me to shit stadiums like that, I need to be paid more."
I think part of him still buried in the field. R. Mason Thomas. That's why they wanted to run ball, not to run out the clock. But Nico was about to die on that field. So
buddy, that was a physical game. I expect, honestly, all jokes aside, whenever that's one of the ones I'm looking forward to the most, just because, you know, I don't feel like Oklahoma has like besides Texas, has a rival. I feel like Mizzou's kind of becoming one. You know, there's some of these games that, but I'm trying to find the one. And Mike says, we've talked about rivalry games that maybe people don't talk about. He really thinks Tennessee and Oklahoma could be one of those rivalry games. And I'm telling you, if you come over to Knoxville and you make this, because the last time you came to Knoxville was not good, man. I want to talk. It may have been the loudest Neyland has ever been, but it ended very quietly because I felt like Tennessee had an opportunity to do something special and they didn't. So a lot of these young kids have no idea, but us old farts, we remember well the last time Oklahoma came to
Baker
town.
Mayfield's coming out party and Sterling Shepard flying down the sideline. Yeah, I do think, you know, it's interesting because, yeah, we've got Texas and, you know, all the pod talk, right? People are like, "Hey, who do you want in your pod? Yeah. Who's, you know, rival?" I think geographically we need to replace Oklahoma State. I think Arkansas makes the most sense with that because, I mean, my sister went to Arkansas. Some of my best friends went to Arkansas. It's actually like Fayetteville is basically like equidistant here to Norman from my house. Like, so I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I find it interesting that LSU and Oklahoma played on rivalry week. Because like they have a rivalry week and we played. So they could have put anybody with us, but LSU doesn't. I mean, who's LSU's main rival? Like main rival that is obvious. Because OU's obvious one is Texas.
Yeah, I mean Arkansas is pretty good. Ole Miss is, you know, but honestly, it's not like the Iron Bowl or you know, the Red River or anything like that. So I would argue the best one for me was Florida, and they forced that one.
Right.
You know, they kind of created that rivalry. So
I would love for LSU and Oklahoma to become rivals.
That'd be good.
Mainly because their fans are insane. That makes for a great rivalry. And I love me some Cajun food, Cousin Shane. So I want to keep going down to Baton Rouge and loading up my cooler full of boudin and all kinds of fish and driving it back to Tulsa, because I definitely did that. I've still got boudin in my freezer, ready to keep me through the summer. So, yeah, give me LSU.
That's awesome.
In rivalry week.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, that's where we probably should go. Go down there, and we'll share some gumbo and cold beer, and that'd be a hell of a matchup.
Hell yeah.
It was great this year. There was a brief moment I thought Oklahoma's going to win that one, but obviously LSU took it off. But that could be a very special game.
Yeah.
But hey, man, sorry to be dragging out show number two, but again, I appreciate you coming on, and I look forward to seeing you again.
Absolutely, man. Talk soon. Thanks again.
See you guys.